presents the Quincy Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast. I'm Adam, and on the line we have Kirby Bartlett-Sloan.
Also known as the Boringer Blue Stabilizer.
After nonsense, we have Robert Haynes.
Hello.
And donated by Toby Haydock, we have Johnny Candon.
Hello there.
Who doesn't know what he's let himself in for being on the show this week?
Not really, no. But happy to be here.
And you haven't signed any contracts or anything, so we'll come
no,
on.
No, will I?
Right then,
go ahead.
On, Kirby. You go ahead, because I need to see if I've got any emails.
Yeah, Kirby, what were you going to say?
I was going to tell Johnny that we talk about this obscure show called Doctor Who. I don't know if
you've ever heard of it. Is it like a kind of rip-off of Inspector Spacetime?
I think so. Yeah, well, cool. It is actually kind of obscure over here.
Is it?
Very, very, very rare to find someone who has heard of it over here.
No, well, it isn't.
That's huge.
No, it isn't. What about these great big conventions that... like one Doctor Who convention in America is about the same size as about three or four Doctor Who conventions in Britain.
Yeah, but you can't. True. You cannot. People here, if you say you watch Doctor Who, they have idea.
Huh. Really? But in that TV show, you know, Community. Do you watch Community?
I don't watch it, but I have seen the Doctor Spacetime segment.
Yeah, I just assumed that Doctor Who was well known enough for them to do that, but
that's more of a inside joke.
Yeah. Okay, so even though people would see that and kind of, you know, they just think it's some obscure show, they wouldn't know that it was based on Doctor Who.
Correct.
Okay.
It's becoming more and more popular here, much more than because of the revival of the series in 2005. I was in a small gift store in a mall on Saturday with my daughters, and there was a Doctor Who T-shirt there, and
cool.
Someone saw my little, I've got a TARDIS on my keychain, and the clerk at the store saw that and said, "Oh, Doctor Who! I like that show. I watch it."
Oh, that's
so, TARDIS on your keychain.
Yeah, it's a little blue.
Lug that around.
Yeah.
That must be pretty heavy.
Of course it's blue.
Very good. Yes, yeah, very good.
Hey, it's 5:24 in the morning.
Oh, Jesus.
So, yes, that rather indicates the madness of people that are prepared to appear on the show. But anyway, Johnny.
Hello.
Well, tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, I know Toby through, we're both stand-up comedians, so that's how I met him initially. We write a column together, for Doctor Who magazine, called The Battle of Wits, and, I've been a Doctor Who fan forever, really, since I was about 9, and I'm 14 now. that's about it, really. And, yeah, live in Dublin, but work in the UK, all that jazz, you know.
Excellent. So, how's the Doctor Who scene in Ireland, then?
Well, do you know, it's a little bit, it sounds a little bit similar to the States, in that, Doctor Who's always been on here, because we get BBC, same as in the UK, so it is a thing, but it's never been as big a thing here as it has been in Britain, and it was quite culty and underground, and it was kind of, as only when Forbidden Planet, the chain of comic shops, opened up here in 1987, I think, or something like that, that everybody sort of, like, there started to be a kind of a fan, a fan base that people would actually, like, swap videos and things like that, and that's sort of when I first became aware of another Doctor Who fan in Ireland back then. And he was horrible, though. He used to sell me the tapes, so I was only 11, so I got Silver Nemesis and Remembrance of the Daleks for £11, so it was. It's only I think since the revival back in 2005, I think it kind of kicks, a lot more kids got into it then, you know what I mean? So it's almost, it's a thing now. Like, I mean, there's like, you can buy everything, you can buy everything here that you can buy in England. Like, you can get all the big standee things and the posters and videos and DVDs and everything. It's a proper kind of thing now. But back in the day, back when I was starting out as a fan, there was very little to be doing, really.
Blimey, that's well, it's good though, isn't it, that the world has opened up a little bit on the Doctor Who front. In fact, internationally, we've had some Russians on the show a couple of weeks ago, in fact, that
really?
Yeah, mad on it, and they've got their own podcast, which we don't understand.
That's fantastic.
Alright, so I've got some emails. I found them, and excellent. I'm going to use my iPhone gadget thing to read them out, so that's why I'm making the excuse of the fact that it might not sound very good. I think I'll ignore that one. That was from Sandro. I don't think it was actually anything to do with... Ah, here we are. This is from a familiar chap. Let's see if I can get this to work. High-tech gadgetry. I hope this doesn't muck up the phone call or the Skype call, because I'm using the same Wi-Fi line to play this. Here we go. Hello, oh, it's too quiet. Hang on. I'll start again.
Hi, Captain.
Here we go. Starting again.
Hello, Gentlemen Back Podcast, this is Ian Kirk. Yesterday, the 13th of May, was my birthday, and the birthday of the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Yay.
I share my birthday with Stevie Wonder, Peter Gabriel, B. Arthur, George Lucas, and Gabriel Fahrenheit, who devised the Fahrenheit temperature scale used in America. I wonder if he would have thought Rose Tyler is hot.
Ha.
The Impossible Planet and the Satan Pit by Matt Jones. There was an early computer game called Doom, which inspired this story, although most of the details are different. In the game, it is former humans who are possessed. The game is set on a space base, and there is a final confrontation with a large satanic figure. In the Doctor Who story, we are mining again. This is a constant Who theme. Rose puts herself in charge and defeats the devil. The helmets have lights inside to show the actors' faces, as is usual on film and TV. It was nice to hear Alicia on the show again. Dale P for pizza. Bye for now.
Thank you, Ian. That was Ian Kirk.
Yeah. Well done, Ian.
Who is a regular contributor to can't speak all of a sudden to the show. Right, there's more. Here we go. This is from a chap called Jim the Fish, although he calls himself James on the email, which is suspicious. Here we go.
You have a message. Connecting you now.
Ow!
Ow!
Alpha Centauri Mega Pizza? I'd like a Hawaiian special with extra ham and large fries.
What are you doing?
Ordering a Hawaiian special.
But you're talking to the 20 Megabyte Podcast.
You mean that's not the Alpha Centauri Mega Pizza?
Natasha, this saboteuring has to stop.
Please. Don't ban me from the audio feedback.
Computer, initiate anti-saboteur protection. Now. Who wants to NSM their friends?
I do. Help, don't.
Who wants to drive me round the bend?
I do. Help, don't.
Who wants to check their Facebook a lot?
Their Facebook a lot? Oh, how I would. Ouch, not.
Who likes to hear the chiming clock?
I do. Help, don't.
Who likes to make me lose the plot?
I do. Help, don't.
Who wants to order pizza for two?
I do. Ouch, don't.
And I don't. Cause
all
I
want
is who.
Help.
Your message has ended. Have a nice day.
Yeah, thank you, Jim the Fish.
Yeah.
It's unusual. There's normally a question attached to those. But
yeah, there is.
Superb. Well done.
He had lots of questions. Every single line was a question.
Was it? Oh, I see. Yeah, but not necessarily. Thank you, Kirby.
It's not a direct question for us.
Pedantic moment number one. Right then, one last
thank
one.
Thank you.
It's from our Isle of Wight listener, Mr. Roy Spearman. Hello, Roy. He says in email form, so it's been 2 years now of the podcast, as they still haven't caught up with you. It says as. Maybe it should say and. As they still haven't caught up with you, I'm impressed. Although your exile to the Isle of Wight continues... What do you mean, exile to the Isle of Wight? I am glad to see, LOL. All right. Anyway, this double-handed episode, he's talking about Possible Planet and Satan Pit, I think. Yep. Unless he's talking about the double-handed episode that we did... Oh, no, never mind. This double-handed episode was, as I'm sure Kirby will point out, the first time we see the Ood, and so can be blamed as the genesis for thousands of Ood puns and jokes, most of which actually appear in the episode itself, to be honest with you. As in, that's really Ood, and how very Ood, etc. It's also one of the few occasions where the Hooniverse touches on anything with an as overtly religious parallel to real-world belief systems. We don't see anything nearly as close to
the diamonds.
Indeed, but that does get mentioned. We don't see anything as close until the time of Angels with Matt Smith, where Riversong's services have been engaged by the church, who have a very militaristic, I can't say that word, so I'm not even going to try, approach to the evangelist. Thanks, everybody, for putting these words in these emails. If you're going to put words like that in emails, please send in audio feedback. Militaristic approach to evangelism. But I'm getting a few years' worth of episodes ahead of myself. The confrontation of the Doctor's assertion is that he doesn't believe in the devil as an existing creature and the embodiment of evil. I'm trying to do things two things at once here, sorry. The embodiment of evil, when faced with the evidence of his own eyes, is very well portrayed by Mr. Tennant, and for me, I have to be honest at this point, and admit that I haven't had time to revisit this episode prior to typing this, so I'm working purely on memory. The end of second part of the story left me unclear as to whether this was Satan, as in the Christian sphere of influence, or if it was a psychic creature of some kind that latched onto the atmospheric image of the base's crew's imaginations and religious knowledge, and used as a template to build a culture and fear and power around itself.
It was Sutek.
Yeah, well, the voice was. After all, the human imagination is possibly one of the most fertile grounds for the invention of weapons against yourself. There is an old saying about the fear of revenge being worse than the act itself. Anyway, I expect you'll now pull all that apart. Enjoy. Catch you later. Roy Spearman, our Isle of Wight listener. Thank you, Roy. Right, yes. Are we going to pull that apart?
It's a good idea. It's an interesting, hypothesis on what it might be. I think, personally, when I watched it, I thought it was the devil. I thought it was the creature that the devil was based on. I thought, I thought it was the thing that from the beginning of time or whatever that.
Well, it did say it was the all devil, time, wasn't it? All religions' devil. It was the devil, basically.
Yes, and I believed them when they said that. I think the idea of it being, you see what you want to see. I think that big guy was there, bellowing his head off, chained up. You know, that's what I think.
Yeah, I agree, but obviously we'll look further into what he was saying about the story, because I have my notes. Oh yeah, that took me 3 hours to write this morning. I've just realised
as long to print.
I've left Magic's trapped upstairs in a little dog cage while the plumber was in this morning. I'm just going to release him. Sorry, I'll be back in a few moments.
Please release him. Let him go.
What did he say the dog's name was?
Magic.
Magic. Oh right. Okay.
The other one.
The other one's Star.
Okay. I didn't know. So when he said I've left Magic trapped in a cage upstairs, I thought right, he's actually lost the plot.
I have returned. Stop flapping your ears, Magic.
Sorry.
Okay.
Right. The Impossible Planet / The Satan Pit by Matt Jones. Now, has Matt Jones done any other Doctor Who stories since then?
I don't know. Wikipedia to the answer.
Well, you normally have it to hand.
I told you, this week I am a Boehringer Blue Stabilizer. I did not have enough time to do my standard research.
But it's a great aid to your pedantry. But anyway, the TARDIS is a bit queasy, as the Doctor says.
He wrote a Torchwood, Dead Man Walking.
Oh, did he?
and he also wrote the second episode of the Dirk Gently series.
Oh, right. Okay. Oh. Thank you for that. So the TARDIS is a bit queasy, and Rose suggests that if there's a problem, they could always get back inside and go somewhere else, and they laugh.
They laugh, yeah.
They've landed in a sanctuary base. Rose sees Welcome to Hell, and then some other text, which they couldn't read because the TARDIS couldn't decipher it. The writing is so old, like it says, the TARDIS couldn't translate it. And then the Ood arrive, stating that they must feed, and they get surrounded, and we get a title sequence.
We must feed.
And then after the title sequence, Ood taps his little orb thing, and then continues, "You, if you are hungry."
I love that beginning. That's a great beginning.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like a sort of cliffhanger that you normally get to the end of a first half of a two-parter, isn't it? With a ridiculous resolution at the end of it. But it didn't matter at the beginning of the story.
So how many times did they say, "We must feed," before he tapped it to get it working on it?
About the same amount of times a Dalek would say, "Exterminate, exterminate, exterminate," before it.
And without ever exterminating.
And same with the Cybermen, with saying, "Delete, delete," etc. They meet the crew, and there's an immediate alert, and some running ensues, as it obviously generally does in Doctor Who anyway. They arrive on the bridge, then there's an impact, and everyone's fine. The Toby is sent to check the rocket link. He objects because it's not in his department, but the captain insists. They're on a rock. Well, I say the rock's more of a planet, hence the impossible planet, around a black hole, and it's an impossibility, apparently, yet it's happening. The Toby because hit... Yes, because of...
The way it's held in space, and consumed by the black hole. Yeah.
They had a little graphic of this sort of funnily thing, sort of like a time corridor, gravity corridor thing, wasn't it? Toby hears a voice, while he's on his little mission, and the black hole is called... Anyway, I've got some quiz questions coming up now, because I do know the answer, because I've written it down. The black hole is called what, then?
Jeff?
That would be a brilliant name for it. But Kirby is currently frantically looking through Wikipedia for the answer.
You're typing, can't you?
And sorry, your time's up. The black hole is called K37 Gem 5.
Oh.
Right, what's
the planet is called Crop Tor.
Only because you've got that up on the same page. The black hole is supposed to be... Mighty Demon, this is how it was described by Ida, I think, who was tricked into swallowing a planet only to spit it out because it... I'll tell you, there's quite a lot of poetic little things in this story. Very, very...
It's a good script.
Yeah, I agree. If you're a Shakespearean actor, I'd imagine you absolutely love this sort of dialogue. But, so that was quite a good bit of line. A gravity funnel, which, of course, is brought back again in the Matt Smith story, is it Time of Angels or something like that? They use the gravity... No, it's not, I've jumped ahead, sorry.
The gravity globe,
that was later on in the story. I'll come back to that in a minute. So it's the gravity funnel which is actually keeping them from crashing into the black hole. And also the graphic they used was quite retro, when they had this graphic of how the gravity funnel works. And then obviously around this little graphic were lots of retro style controls and stuff, which are reminiscent a little bit of, for me, Case of Angel's Eye. Hang on, who's that just barking?
Wasn't me.
No, it was Star, but I was just wondering why she's doing it. Rose objects to the slavery of the Ood, rather like the objections that Donna had, and also the injections.
Planet of the Ood or whatever.
That any other person who's met a nude since then had. The Doctor realises that the power source required to maintain the gravity funnel is impossibly large. There was a civilization on the planet once that buried something. I think we can guess what that was, even at that stage. And it wasn't treasure or a bone or anything like that. The Doctor hugs Captain Zack. Now, I made me think of the fact that there's Captain Hugs. He hugs Captain Zack because he's a human. But the fact that he's called Captain Zack made me think of Captain Jack. There's only one letter change there.
To actually,
Anyway, and gushes about humans being amazing and mad, which he does quite a lot in this story as well. They should pack their bags and get out of here. I think he's talking about the humans on the ship. Because
what's going on? Yeah,
yeah. They said storage 6 had been destroyed. The TARDIS was in there, so obviously, then you know. I remember at the time actually, because you have to bear in mind when this story, as Alicia said on the last episode, when this story went out, Isabella was born. So I was actually in hospital
watching
Doctor this story while Isabella was downstairs in the neonatal unit. At the time I watched this, I did think, how are they going to get the TARDIS back? Which is quite good. You always think, when it TARDIS, because it does occasionally disappear in, like this in stories, and you always wonder how they're going to get it back. The Doctor wants to go down to the heart of the planet to retrieve the TARDIS, and Ida offers to put the Doctor on a duty rota in the laundry. I thought it was quite generous of her. And the Doctor is guilty about trapping Rose there, because obviously with no TARDIS, Rose, and he said about having promised to Jackie that, you know, he'd look after her. And then they play Ravel's Bolero while the Ood are working.
Sorry.
I was going to say, I don't remember actually asking for some rendition of it.
I thought it was lovely.
Don't encourage him, please. Toby hears a voice. That's not Toby Haydock, by the way. That's Toby from the story.
Toby Haydock might listen to voices. We don't know.
I couldn't possibly comment.
Nor could I.
No.
Anyway, hears a voice while working in his quarters.
I like the way they did that scene.
And he thinks it's Daniel messing around. And he goes out into the corridor, but there's nobody there. Rose chats to Anood, who goes briefly weird and talks about the beast and his armies.
When she was saying about, I used to do that job, remember?
That's right. It's funny that I think every single episode of this era of Doctor Who has Rose engaging in some sort of conversation with some character. If I think back, I'm thinking to the conversation she has with Gwyneth in The Unquiet Dead. And I can't think of any off the top, but I'm pretty sure she does have this sort of conversation.
The little blue lady in The End of the World.
That's it, yeah. A small talk conversation with at least one character in the story. An image of the monster, or a monster, appears briefly on the captain's scanner.
Oh, and that was good. I like the way they did that.
So. It was good, yes. Toby is told not to turn around, and if he looks at the voice behind him, he will die. And of course, he looks round, and everything seems fine for a moment, but then there's alien writing on the palms of his hands. But why is he wearing those gloves for anyway? I don't quite understand that.
And tell me,
looking at various pieces of pottery or something.
Yeah.
And didn't want to damage
that
them.
That they dug up, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But did you notice something about that scene with all the writing on him? Did you think Stephen Moffat was watching and decided to use
bring
that?
This up.
Yeah, when they met the Silence, do you think he sort of got some kind of idea?
There's a possibility that might have happened, yes. I can't say one way or another.
Because I remember we were all thinking that they were possibly making that connection, when all we saw were saw the people with the marks where they were marking how many times they saw the Silence from a distance, and we couldn't quite tell if it was writing or what.
There is a possibility that Mr. Moffat was paying some sort of tribute to the genius of Matt Jones by bringing that sort of idea into The Impossible Astronaut. Isn't it funny? It's called The Impossible Astronaut. And this is The Impossible Planet. How weird.
Yeah. Even pinching titles, I don't know.
Three words from a title, two words, I should say. The Scarlet Systems is swallowed by the black hole. We see this.
Yeah, that was pretty sad.
Yeah. Rose asks the Doctor if he can build another TARDIS. He says that they were grown, not built. Is that the first time he mentions?
Yes.
Yeah, he does. Mm. It is. Well, if you say so, Bobby, that is, oh God, yes.
And then he goes and builds that TARDIS in the Doctor's wife, so.
But couldn't that have been bits of old TARDISes that were grown in the first place?
Excellently explained. Right. They contemplate settling down where they are. Rose's phone rings, and you think, oh, it's Blimmin' Jackie on the phone. But no! He is awake. comes over the thing.
And she throws down her phone, doesn't she?
Yeah, which doesn't have the screen like, smash. Because like all the phones from those days, the screens don't, and she wouldn't ever throw her phone down. Her mother would, but not Alicia. Alicia drops her phone, she doesn't throw it. But yeah, Rose throws it, and of course in those days, all that would happen, the battery would just fall off the back, and they'd put the battery back in, it's fine. Nowadays, you throw your phone, your screen smashes.
Yeah.
But the battery stays intact. It's quite ironic in some ways. The Ood are empathic, and they register basic 5, but basic 30 comes up on the computer, and the Ood wake up and say, "And you will worship him." Scooty.
Did you think they did the scene replicator? The people replicator with that again to add the numbers of Ood.
I don't know.
Ah,
I hadn't thought of that one.
I probably mentioned it
in commentary that I didn't listen to.
Yeah,
no, I would never have had time. I could have put it on InfoText commentary. But
there is no InfoText on Doctor Who.
Alternative commentary on because I was watching it on the Mac, and it's much easier to watch DVDs on the Mac because you can actually take it back just a few frames rather than having to skip back to.
Yeah.
Or press the rewind button, or you know.
The DVDs for modern Doctor Who, the revival, 2005 on, are done by a different group of people at To Entertain, which is now BBC Entertainment, versus the classic. The classic people have InfoText. Yeah. The modern ones do not.
And it's a travesty.
It is a travesty. I wonder why that is.
No idea. They need to rectify
it. Can't be asked.
But I'm pretty sure they will rectify it just for an excuse to re-release the DVDs with extra features.
Yeah.
Scooty hears...
How cynical.
I know, but it's true. Scooty hears open door 41, closed door 41.
Scooty?
What's her name then?
I don't know. I didn't know that was the name.
It is Scooty.
Scooty, yes. The character's name is Scooty.
What did you think That's it was, right. Robert? Suki?
Scooby,
yeah. Anyway, she queries it, and it's an airlock. The wrist communicators are really bulky, I thought. A bit sort of...
A bit like...
Star Trek style ones. Blake 7.
Yeah.
I thought even in those days that the people realised that... I know they were trying to make it very retro, but that communicators and stuff were getting smaller and smaller, because it was quite ironic that it was supposed to be in the future, yet her wrist communicator was bigger than Rose's phone.
Yeah,
but there you go.
I didn't mind it.
No, it's fine. The computer says he is awake. He bathes in the black sun, and Scooty sees Toby outside grinning inanely, and he beckons her. The glass then breaks, and she gets sucked out into space, and panic ensues.
That's a proper spooky bit.
Which bit? When he beckons her.
When you see Toby outside beckoning to her, that's like something from The Omen. Yeah. You know what I mean? For a family show at 7 o'clock on a Saturday evening, that is probably as creepy as you can go.
Yeah, so I think there's quite a lot of things about this that was creepy and spooky, like the Ood with the red eyes, and like I say, the text on him when his eyes go red.
The sort of
feeling of confinement, even though it looks like quite a big ship or quite a big base, but you feel like it's very claustrophobic.
Mm.
In that my kids won't watch this one. They saw it once, and they will not rewatch this one.
Yeah, no, it's a bit much. How old are your kids?
18, 16, and 14.
Really?
Yeah, so I don't think I'll let Isabella watch this one. Although Alicia's not scared by this one, she still refuses to watch The Empty Child and the dances.
Oh, The Empty Child is as scary with the gas mask. Yeah.
Anyway, they run through some airlocks and find safety, including the normal Toby somehow gets in with them. Toby gets in with them. They look up and see Scooty's body floating in space. That's a quite iconic scene for New Doctor Who, isn't it? I think they always use that as people say it's one of the most sort of spooky and iconic scenes of her just sort of floating up. What only thing that got me about that is she's in the vacuum of space, yet her arms are sort of waving around. So I don't think she's dead and her arms would wave around that much.
But she got post-death spasms.
or she was being hit by mini meteorites or
right,
operating her arms, or maybe the
was
beast
just against the green screen.
Maybe the beast was controlling her and trying to make her do semaphore signalling or something like that. We are doomed. Or something like that. Anyway, the drill stopped as they reached point zero. The doctor yes.
You know that the whole drill bit drilling into the planet reminded me of Inferno.
Yes.
And that sort of like when they're going to reach it, something bad's going to happen.
Like the Silurian two-parter that came a few years later.
Absolutely, yeah. The drill stopped and they reached. Well, I've done that bit, sorry. The doctor dons a spacesuit and talks Zach into letting him go down the shaft. The Ood are told to stay put, but and that no orders can counteract that one. And they do not respond. The Doctor and Ida arrive at the base of the shaft. Ida uses a gravity globe to light up the chamber. And that is what I was talking about.
Like Ian mentioned in his voicemail.
Yes.
The space helmets always have these lights inside so we can see the action.
Yes, yes.
So convenient. You would not be able to see outside.
No, you wouldn't. No, so that's a very good point. But it does add to the effect. I seem to remember in Star Trek, the motion picture, when Kirk was flying through space, heading to it was Spock.
Spock.
Yeah, heading towards Visia. His sort of face was lit up in a similar way. Was it?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so. Yeah, yeah.
It's been a long time since I've seen that movie.
No, that's a very.
I avoid that one.
Well, I found that really spooky. Actually, that particular
scene. It's not bad, Kirby.
When they see the giant Ilea in that. I know we're sort of slightly digressing, but that I find that quite spooky, and I watched it as a, how old was I then, 15 year old, quite spooky. Let's go back to a Doctor Who, everybody's got all quiet. Where did I get up to?
I was real excited when that movie came out.
Oh, me too.
Absolutely.
Yes, because all I could have as far as Star Trek goes, I had to record just the audio off the television, so I'd have a tape.
I did the same thing.
I didn't do it with Doctor Who because because I was into Star Trek before I was into Doctor Who properly. I mean, I used to watch Doctor Who, but I didn't come as a Doctor Who fan until after I had been a massive Star Trek fan. But then I realised after that Doctor Who's much better than Star Trek. But
I've got reels and reels of real tape that I can't play back anymore of those audios.
Yeah. So I went up to Newcastle and met one of my cousins, and she had tapes and tapes of all these Star Trek stories I'd never seen, and then when the next series of Star Trek came onto the BBC, I just got my tape deck and I just record them, and I'd play them off as I was going off to sleep at night. So
they were that interesting.
When they're showing this gravity globe, if I had been able to listen to the commentary, I'm betting that the cavern they're in there is the same caves that they've filmed the
Time of Angels
in.
That's a good point. I hadn't really looked at that, but it does look very similar.
I will check.
I thought you will. I'd be very disappointed if you didn't. But it's nice in a way.
It had a good effect with the, you know how they had those animals sort of guarding the gate kind of thing, the stone ones.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it was very atmospheric and, very well done.
Yeah, but what we're saying, I mean, we criticise Mr. Moffat in sort of reusing and borrowing or basically nicking ideas. On this instance, it was a nice reusing of an idea. And it was consistent, so pleased with that. Right, where do we go up to? While you're finding that out, Toby? Sorry, I said Toby because that's the next line. It just says Toby is...
Here's the mail. Postman's here.
Yeah. So Toby is not as enthusiastic as he should be about the discovery of the civilization because the Doctor sort of calls up and says, "Oh, look, you should see." No, it was Ida, wasn't it? See all the things that are down here, all the artifacts, and he doesn't sound particularly pleased or enthusiastic as should be, being an archaeologist, because he's being sort of trying to fight off the beast inside him. The Doctor mentions this is going to be the best Christmas Wolford has ever had. There was a bit more to what he said there, but that's a bit that stood out for me. And the Ood are on a basic 100, which is apparently brain dead. Apparently, so there you go.
Maxed out.
Indeed. The Doctor and Ida find a huge
seal. The bottom
seal.
Of the pit.
Oh, yes.
The bottom pit is the same caves as used in Time of Angels, Flesh and Stone. They also filmed inside Vesuvius for the fires of Pompeii.
No.
And it's also the interior of the Sycorax spaceship.
Oh.
Yeah.
Why am I not surprised? Did they use the Millennium Stadium at all, George?
No, not for this one. and also, there's another area. The quarry that they used was used as the rocket silo in Utopia.
Oh, excellent.
That's all right.
Anyway, the Doctor mentioned... I've done that bit. Doctor and Ida find a huge seal on the ground, and the Doctor calls it a trapdoor. Toby has gone all weird again. There are words of the beast, and he was woken, I think he says. These are the words of the beast, and he has woken. The Ood get infected, and their eyes go red, and the Ood kill some woman, I think it was a woman, with their little orb things. Yeah. They attach the orb things to the heads. Remember, they're being...
Getting zapped.
That was a bit freaky, I remember, at the time. There's a great rumbling, and the planet starts moving towards the black hole while the trap door opens. Rose and Jefferson are trapped, and a monster is free. That is the beast. I just call him Monster because we weren't quite sure who he was, if you hadn't already watched the episode. Anyway,
Still insist it's Sutek. Yeah. complete with his...
Yeah, but
he must have his little cushion.
Is there a massive hand waiting to grab the cushion from?
Yes. Well, I would have to say about Gabrielle... sorry, I've forgotten his surname.
Gabrielle Wolf.
That's it. Who uttered my... favourite line in the history of Doctor Who that a baddie ever said, which is die, I bring the gift of death to all humans.
I bring Sutek's gift of death.
That's it. I love that line and the way it's delivered in the original thing. And then we had the stink.
Did you see the comedy bit that they did for that with Sutek?
Yes.
No.
On the DVD.
Yeah, on one of the DVDs. It's very funny. Yeah. They've even got the cushion bit as well.
I think
talking to ants or something, and he's saying, "Abase yourself, you tiny ants."
Well, that brings an end to episode one. Episode two. Jefferson shoots at the Ood. They stabilize.
Jefferson, by the way, the actor, has been in Being Human, the series three.
Oh, yeah.
And he was in Sherlock, Scandal in Belgravia.
Thank you for that.
And we just need to get Adam... Adam, you need to watch Sherlock. It's excellent.
Did you watch Sherlock? No.
Oh my God, it's amazing! You should get on to Sherlock.
I barely have time to watch.
We've got a big scandal here. They're showing the second series on PBS here.
Yeah.
I missed it last night, but I found out. Yes. I found out last night that they chopped 26 minutes out of it.
What?
Why is that? Is that to fit the schedule or something?
That's very unusual for PBS. PBS usually... there's the clock.
Yeah, there's the clock. Woohoo.
You're further away from it than usual.
Yeah, it's getting louder.
Right, I'm shutting the door, right? There you go. Can't hear the clock now.
We like the clock. Don't. Your audience
it's
likes the clock.
The show.
No, it
yeah.
doesn't. Where did it get up to? They're
not actually firing those guns, and that's just they just had that flash.
Oh, yeah, I don't expect them to fire loaded weapons in studios. I have to say, it's probably a little bit dangerous.
Didn't they do that on the Caves of Androzani, and it affected the picture?
Amateur dramatic thing that my mate wrote, because he was into Quentin Tarantino, so he got like four or five of these blank firing guns, or basically real guns that were turned into blank firers.
Yeah.
And they very loud. When we filmed it within a certain area, the end video has got these little exactly the same style of distortion
as the caves.
Is that the video that you posted a couple of days ago?
No, that's a different one. No,
Machete.
Okay. I haven't got the copyright of the film I've just mentioned. I have got it somewhere in my person, but he wrote it, so he owns the copyright for it. So I don't think I would be allowed to put it on YouTube without his permission. However, I have been requested by the cast of Machete to actually put it on YouTube, hence I'll put it on there. Basically, because cool. they keep on asking me to give them copies of the DVD, and I just sort of be easier just to put it on there. And I tag them on it. They haven't sort of complained about it. So I can take it off if they don't like it. So there is another film I could put on that I sort of partly own the copyright to because I partly wrote it, so I might put that on if I can find it. But it's very ropey because it's like a copy of VHS second generation copy. Can you imagine? It's like the old Doctor Who second generation copy,
yes.
Oh, yeah.
Remember not the Revenge of the Cybermen special?
Yeah.
And they did that.
Well, there are some Doctor Who stories that I only have that way anyway.
Yeah.
Although since they are beginning to release things, Happiness Patrol is one. I realize that it's come out.
You got that wrong. You've got that wrong.
It's come out on DVD recently.
How is it said, Kirby? Come on. Come on. It is the come on.
Anyway, back to my notes.
I don't even know what's going on.
Don't worry about it. We'll come back.
Venus Patrol.
Yeah, well, who says it like that?
Ben.
Okay.
One of our co-presenters who's not on today.
No, because he's got a job. A job that prevents him from podcasting on Mondays. What, job?
Yes, don't swear! Please!
Anyway, back to my notes. Excuse me. So basically, because it's the end, the cliffhanger's over and they've started episode two, so miraculously, the planet stabilizes and it's returned to its orbit. So I didn't really explain
nothing
that.
Nothing to worry about.
No. Danny escapes the rampaging Ood, but another crew member gets frazzled with a little orb thing. And then they agree on strategy 9. Doctor reports in. The trapdoor is open, but there is nothing but a chasm there. Ida is ordered to withdraw. No innuendo, please. But she wants to go down. Please, no innuendo. The Doctor says for once. No, because I know what you lot are like. The Doctor says for once in his life he's going to say retreat. Jefferson wants to shoot Toby, but Rose defends him. Strategy 9 is opening the airlocks to send the Ood into the vacuum of space, I think, basically. The captain announces to the Beast that this is Captain Zachary Cross Flane of Sanctuary Base 6, represented the Torchwood Archive.
Yeah.
So there we go.
This episode's mention of Torchwood.
Yeah.
The Beast has been imprisoned since before our universe was created, which is a very interesting scenario. Not really explained, but...
Does it say what he was imprisoned for? Is it like shoplifting?
Yeah, apparently so. Yeah.
That's why I lost one of his horns.
Apparently what it actually was, it was for thumping football players on a football pitch and then wandering off in a very aggressive fashion and then posting things on Twitter in relation to Alan Shearer.
And what he did to his mum.
And that as well. Anyway, the Beast describes Rose as the valiant child who will die in battle so very soon. It's obviously
alluding to the final episodes.
Indeed. Wasn't quite right, but never mind. The Doctor says...
I just got the idea that the Beast was just trying to scare everyone.
Oh, that's what you thought it was it?
Yeah.
What a beast! Anyway.
Literally.
Oh God!
Oh no!
It's all right. It's just the letterbox flap just fell down back down again, triggering a bark from magic. Anyway, so the doctor goes a few times, reminiscent of several previous doctors.
and he did his. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Just the once, but I haven't actually got up to that bit yet. He said that when Scooty was seen floating in space, wasn't it? That's when
Yes.
We were watching. I'm trying to remember which 11th Doctor story we were watching yesterday when he goes, "I'm sorry, I'm so sorry."
Excellent. I'll look out for that one.
All of us looked at each other. Suddenly, did it.
The Doctor talks up the humans. For some reason, seems to be very sort of very positive about humans in this story. Then the cable to the shaft snaps, and then they only have 55 minutes of air left. The Ood start cutting through the doors with little door
bolt cutters. Bolt cutters.
Toby thinks he can understand some of the text, but they don't really go back into his sort of slightly understanding the text. I thought they were going to, but they didn't. Ida wants to abseil, and this is the bit where the Doctor decides he'll go down. The Doctor jumps down a little
bit.
What?
Nothing.
The Doctor
jumps...
Oh, shush. For God's sake.
There should be a lot more cable.
Yeah.
However many miles down
they are. 10 miles. He said 10 miles, yeah. I think.
Anyway, he jumps down and then is lowered down the rest of the way. The crew and Rose escape through some conduits. Jefferson gets trapped. What a hero! There's an Ood behind the final door. Danny... That was quite good, that bit, because I didn't expect that. I thought they were going to get away. Danny turns basic down to zero and the Ood all collapse. And basically, I think that's what happens. I just saw him saying, you're doing something with the computer and the basic number going from 100 down to zero. And,
yeah.
Basically, I think he just turned off the... Or he blocked the communication, didn't he, between the...
Something like that, yeah. I can't remember specifics.
The Doctor mentions...
You think the Ood have had some sort of weird implant put into them then? Because, I mean, they don't do that ever again to the Ood when they turn up future stories. There's nothing about basic anything. Do you think it's kind of an inhibitor thing or something?
Yeah, quite possibly. But obviously, I think maybe it's just a way they sort of measure the empathic abilities.
Yeah.
Just tapping into it in some way.
Anyway, the Doctor mentions Draconia and demons, or Deimos, when going on about representations of the Horned Beast.
Apparently in the Confidential, which I haven't seen since...
I saw the second one.
First on, Russell T. Mentioned that he was trying to wrap this story around the demons.
Oh, was it?
And there were some a lot of this was deliberately supposed to be referencing the demon.
Yeah.
Which I've read. I read the Target novelization, but I've never seen the demon. I can't wait until I
never
get
seen.
What?
I can't wait till I can get the DVD.
I've got it on DVD actually, Kirby.
It contains when I say it contains the longest sex scene Doctor Who's ever had. It's not in the book. It's not the entire episode.
Excellent. What's that noise? He could really have said that the civilization that trapped him were the Deimos, or Deimos, or whatever he called them, that would have been quite good.
Yeah.
But not. Anyway, the end of the cable is reached. The Doctor says he could survive a 30-foot drop, not quite as much as he dropped in the end of Time 2.
Yes.
So, all I can say to that then, Mr. Russell T. Davis, is... Eh?
Yeah.
And I believe the fourth Doctor's fall off the radio telescope was much less than that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, he releases himself from the winch. They all think the Doctor's dead, and Ida is told
from
that
the winch.
Winch. It's a winch thing, isn't it? He's got a pulley.
He didn't have a winch there.
Shush. They all think
Ida.
Idaho. Yeah. the Doctor is. So Ida is told that she is sort of... She didn't actually use the word doomed, but basically it's it. She ain't got any hope.
Doomed.
Rose wants to stay, but Zack talks her out of it physically by basically knocking her out with something or other. I don't know if it was an injection or what, but basically she's rendered
unconscious. I think it was an injection kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah. The Doctor has landed and his helmet is smashed, but he can still breathe.
Eagle has landed.
Yes. The crew escape in the rocket. Very good rocket, actually, to be said, although...
It's a nice, properly science-fiction-looking rocket.
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Retro.
Very sort of Flash
Gordon.
Thank you for taking the words out of my mouth. The Doctor sees some artifacts, and then he sees the beast all trapped, held back by a couple of chains. Now, what got me, right, this big, powerful beast thing, and obviously he's been in prison. How on earth... on that planet, did they catch him and chain him? And in a way that he couldn't get out? How did they not...
They probably used the traction beam.
But he's a devil, for God's sake. How are they supposed to stop him? All-powerful
devil. They did go into a bit about how they caught him
on
the program.
Did they?
I can't really remember the specifics, but they did explain how they lured him or whatever.
It was by
false pretenses anyway that he was lured there, and then they had that gravity thing to hold him or whatever.
So they were a bit evil to him then.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. Isn't the whole idea that they put him beside the black hole because he has to use all his powers to stop himself being sucked through there? So by trying to
escape,
they'd have to concentrate on escaping, which would result in him being pulled into the hole. It's kind of a catch 22 thing.
Yeah.
Something like that.
So, Johnny, are you doing that off memory, or did you actually watch this story before coming on the show?
Oh, totally off memory. I mean,
I'm impressed.
Yeah, well, I'm impressed. So,
but I think that's what it was. I think it was kind of like you're down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Fair enough. I love it when my doubts are explained. The Doctor realizes that the jailers gave him air to breathe so he could destroy the beast, or the devil, or what in fact you want to call it.
Well, I think Russell T. Davies refers to him as the devil, I think, in the Confidential.
Yeah, quite so. But basically, the Doctor, I think he realises that the beast's mind isn't in the animal part of the beast that you see.
Yeah.
It is, in fact, inside Toby, but he doesn't actually say that. Because obviously the next
I would have liked to hear him speaking, though, rather than just going...
I agree. My memory of it, because I haven't watched this episode for years, probably since Isabella was born, was that was the case, that the beast...
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. And then I was surprised. He's not speaking. Yeah. What?
Anyway, if he destroys the planet, he destroys the gravity field, and therefore he destroys himself and Rose. So he realises that that's the only way he can go, because he has to destroy the devil. The Doctor destroys the vases and the ship starts falling back into the black hole, and then Toby goes all devil-y. Rose got the gun thing, didn't she? And I thought, she's going to shoot Toby, but what's she going to do? I know what I'll do. I'll shoot the windscreen so as Toby gets sucked out of space. Never mind the rest of us. It would have been easier just to shoot Toby.
Well, they had their seatbelts on, didn't they?
Yeah, I know that, but...
And she took his seatbelt off.
Yeah, but what
about
the air?
Yeah, is that...
Well, yeah, but
they were... She obviously knew
that
there was
some... They had that
shield,
though.
Yeah, she knew that, didn't she?
Obviously. And you know that spaceship was actually on a gimbal, so they could move it up and down to give a bit of realism to the... I don't know, like they were actually in a rocket kind of thing, so...
Okay.
That just added to them.
That must have been in the Confidential, which I haven't seen since it was on originally.
So that basically turns Rose into a murderer, because she releases Toby's seatbelt and kills him. Mm. And then the beast dies in a blaze of fire. Very good effect, actually, as we said. The Doctor then he falls backwards and sort of realises he's landed against the TARDIS.
It's the TARDIS! Yay!
And then the Doctor saves the day for a change. So basically, there's no more need for me to elaborate on the last few scenes, because basically he saves the day and there's loads of gushing and stuff. So, yes. So what do we think then?
I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I loved these two episodes, and I thought they had a very filmic quality to them, and well written, great cast. I just thought it all came together
well. The cast were great. I agree totally. Brilliant acting all the way through it. Yeah,
it was almost like sort of Hinchcliffe-y Doctor Who. You know the way. Quite that horror element, and it was unapologetic horror as well. It wasn't like. Yep. It wasn't like, oh, it's a big robot devil. It was just like, it's just a devil. You know what I mean? And it's kind of a supernatural thing, which in Doctor Who, I think is kind of, they always manage to, I mean, you could explain it away as being part of an alien race, and that's fine, but it is nice sometimes where they just go, no, it's just a big scary thing, you know?
an adult sort of kind of story.
Yeah. And it's like you say, any kid who's seen it, it's weird. I thought at the time that I didn't have kids at the time, but I thought I wouldn't show this to a child, you know what I mean, under the age of about 15, because it's really scary. It's properly scary.
Oh yeah, it's great stuff. This is probably the most Doctor Who-y type, traditional Doctor Who story
since it came back.
Of this series.
Yeah. I think also the guy who played Toby was fantastic.
He
does kind of boring, good-looking man, very well. And then when he's possessed, he's just really terrifying.
Oh, he's a really good actor. I mean, he was in Casualty, I think, when he did this
episode, and since he's been in Coronation Street, playing a baddie.
Okay.
In a completely different style.
He doesn't have all the writing on him in Coronation Street, though.
No, he doesn't. No, he's got a bald head.
No red eyes.
very sinister character he played. I think he's left now, but he was in there. He's a great actor. Really, really good.
Yeah, he's really good.
But all around, a very, very good cast. And it's ironic in a way that we haven't seen a lot of that cast since. I know the lady who played Ida is...
Claire Rushbrook. Yeah, she's done quite a bit. She's been in a few... She plays mums quite a lot. She's been in a few... I quite a crush on Ida, actually, when it went out. I actually thought she was quite... I thought she'd be... You know, every now and then you get somebody who could be a good companion. Like, you know, in Delta and the Bannermen, they had Ray.
Yeah, that's right.
And stuff. And I mean, like, she was written to be a potential companion, but I thought Ida would have been a good, and especially at the end of it when he says, "I'll see you again," doesn't he?
Yeah.
Something like that to her?
I think he does. Yeah.
Yeah, and you think, oh, brilliant. But that's never. I mean, he still might see her again. But I mean, it's. I thought Ida was great.
Yeah, she normally plays quite vulnerable characters in things, doesn't she? She was played a very strong character in this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, she's cool. She's very good.
I'm trying to think of some of the others in it, but it's probably have seen him in other things, but they probably look a bit different now than they did then.
Well, the guy, Captain Zach, he's had a great career. He's been in a lot of movies and stuff. But I know what you mean. There are a few people in it who, I suppose, like any actor, you know, I mean, some of them go on to do a lot of stuff, and some of them just stay under the radar. But I mean. But it was, I think, as a cast, it was one of, a really strong one, you know, it was one of the best they've had.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Jefferson was the other one, the actor who played Jefferson, seen him in loads of other things. Yeah. So.
Yes.
Yeah. But all in all, very, very good. I say I haven't seen it a lot, so I did, obviously, trying to panic and write the notes on it did detract my enjoyment a little bit. But on the whole, it was fast-paced. Great story.
I think this was only the second time I'd seen it since... We all watched it when we first got the DVDs years ago.
Yeah.
And of course the girls did not like it at all.
So that's why you haven't watched it much.
Mm. Right.
It's probably the same with me. It's probably the same with me. I mean, I remember I did try and watch all the Doctor Who stories, New Who stories, with the commentaries, because I wanted to get some use out of the commentaries. I only got up to the Parting of the Ways, and I thought, I don't want to watch the commentary. I want to watch the episode. No, I stopped doing it then.
I thought you were going to say you got halfway through Rose and went, oh, I don't care.
My youngest daughter, my 14-year-old, has gone all gothy on us, and she'd probably like this one now.
Yeah.
It's but a funny. You know what's funny? Thing.
Sorry.
No. I was just thinking, it was funny that RTD, when talking about the episodes, he's saying this was like a kind of breather before the last two episodes.
Yeah.
And I was just saying, I don't reckon it was like that. I thought it was a pretty full-on kind of action.
Absolutely a full-on episode. Yeah. Definitely not a breather.
Possibly one of my favourite ones there's been, I mean, as a fan, I tend to love them all, you know, some more than others. That kind of thing, but I mean, this one ticked every box. I think I just came away from it. I was at a wedding for the second episode, and we were staying in the hotel the wedding was in, and the reception was in. And I actually, my wife actually said, "Look, just go." And so, 5 to 6, 5 to 7, I ran to the bar, grabbed a beer, went upstairs, and stuck it on. And the only thing that could have ruined it was if it had been a really kind of lame episode and I'd come back down and had to, basically suffer the mood for the rest of it. But it was awesome. It's actually, now that we've been talking about it, it actually put me in the mood to actually sit down and watch it again.
Oh, yes, that's good then.
So does your wife like Doctor Who?
She does. We actually did this in a column in the magazine a while ago. There's basically about how your partner reacts to...
I was reading that the other day, actually.
Oh, right, yeah.
But Toby's wife talking about it, yeah. I remember that. I was just reading that.
She does. I mean, at the beginning, obviously, when we started going out together, which was like 10 years ago, I sort of was like, oh, yeah, I really like Doctor Who. And, you know, I think she took that as, I really like cheesecake, in the sense that you're a big time here, but it's nothing ridiculous. But when it came back, when it, you know, when Rose was on, the day that Rose was being broadcast, we got like a load of beer. We had big, like, stupid burgers and hot dog, proper celebration day, you know what I mean, for the lunch. And then when Doctor Who came on, like, about 5 to 7, nobody was allowed to speak. It was just me and her in the apartment, but I just sat there rapt watching the entire thing, taking every second of it in. So I think it was then that she went, oh Jesus, you know. But she does, she enjoys it. She likes Matt Smith more than she liked David Tennant's episodes.
Oh,
which,
cool.
Yeah, which is strange.
For a change.
A lot of people go the other way.
Yeah, well, I think you know, people fancy, although, you know, objectively, Matt Smith's an attractive man, you know, but I think David Tennant with his nice teeth and his big hair.
It all depends how you like your jaw, really, isn't it?
I'm sorry.
I think she thought he was quite apologetic. That's probably why she doesn't like him as well. But Matt Smith, she thinks is a bit different to anything that's gone before. And I have to agree. I think, you know.
He's a bit Troughton-like.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, yeah. But he's, I kind of come to, like, I mean, I'm jumping ahead. I know we're talking about the Satan Pit, but I mean, one story that I have watched quite a lot is, The God Complex. Because I think with Matt Smith as the Doctor, you never really know what he's going to do or how he's going to react to things. And I think that's brilliant as far as Doctor Who goes. But with that story, I knew very little about it when it came on. So it was just, you know, cause you sort of spoil things a bit for yourself, even though you try not to. You're aware. Mm-hmm. But I mean, actually, that's a good example of the Satan Pit and Possible Planet. I knew next to nothing about that when it came on TV. So that's possibly why I enjoyed it as much as I did, because it was just, it was all brand new, really.
Excellent. Yeah, so Kirby, would you say this is the best of this series so far, this story?
Let me get the list of them all up here.
No, you like the one with the wire, don't you?
No, well...
You do, that, oh, dude. Tell me that's your favourite one, isn't it?
What? I couldn't hear what you said.
The Idiot's Lantern. He's referring to your love.
That one was better than I remembered.
But not as good as this.
I have to admit that my sentimental favorite of the entire series too.
Let me guess it. Let me guess it. Fear Her.
School Reunion.
All right. Okay.
Because my first companion was Sarah Jane, so can't help it. But really, it's going to be of the ones we've watched so far in this reviewing of the series, obviously The Girl in the Fireplace. And I'm real, to me, it's for the entire series too. It's going to be a toss up between Girl in the Fireplace and the two-parter at the end.
Okay. Right, so while I remember, I don't know why it's made me think of this, but how many of you have seen the Britain's Got Talent?
The dog.
No, Martin Crofts, who should have won Britain's Got Talent with his magnificent Dalek impression. Yeah, the dog.
Well, have there been more than the two segments of him?
No, just his qualification and his semi-final appearance.
I have to be the person who posted the YouTube bits to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Thank you, Kirby.
Facebook. So.
Yes, thank you, Kirby. But yes,
because I haven't seen it. Yeah. No.
What did he do? What was his? What was
he
his
was
thing?
Able to basically walked on stage in a suit and put a saucepan on his head, and then did basically TARDIS for sale or rent, I think, on his first thing in the voice of a Dalek.
Right.
Basically did a comedy routine as a Dalek, dressed as a bloke with a saucepan on his head. But he's able to do the Dalek voice without a ring modulator. Very cleverly. And then, you have to watch us on YouTube. And then when he was on the semi-final, he did, what was the song he did now? I can't remember now. He did a different song in the guise of a Dalek. But this time his suit had the little sort of semicircular
Dalek bumps
on it. and he had a team of dancers around him as well, and also
the dancers, as you refer to them, were sort of Daleks, except
I think they were blatantly, because Simon Cowell complained, didn't he, saying they're not Daleks. I thought I was quite pleased that he noted that they weren't Daleks and had to say had to complain about that fact. But I think they were just basically robots.
They were cheese graters with with colanders on top.
I think ITV might have had a few copyright issues by having Daleks on actual Daleks on stage. That's the only way they could get around it, because they didn't have a problem with him and Amanda Holden and Simon Cowell. No, actually, it was David Walliams wearing saucepans on their heads. I was gratified that Simon Cowell was more or less defending the sort of image of the Dalek.
My youngest daughter was watching that and going, why does Simon always buzz them? Always do it.
I don't think he always does. He certainly buzzed them.
That's not Mr. Crofts. Those shows aren't the sort of thing we normally watch, so it's kind of their first exposure.
We do, because we've got a house full of women. And that's the sort
of
thing.
Well, so do I. I mean, good grief.
You've got magic.
Three daughters.
Well, Magic wasn't even interested in the actual winners of Britain's Got Talent, which was Ashley and Pudsey, which was fantastic. Anyway, moving away from Britain's Got Talent, I just wanted to mention that because of the Doctor Who connection and the fact that that Amanda Holden and Alicia Dixon asked Doctor Who fans to phone in and vote for Mr. Crofts, and they didn't bother because he didn't get through. But there you go. Maybe they weren't watching is probably the case.
They were listening to Doctor Who podcast.
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I've got before I forget again, I've got the top 30 Doctor Who podcasts at hand.
Oh.
Are we ready? At number 30, a non-mover. Do you mind? A non-mover for...
My babysitter pays more.
Be quiet! A non-mover for Gallifrey DW... I knew I should have sent this to you, Robert. Gallifrey DW podcast. Number 29, a re-entry for Tim's Take On. Number 28, re-entry for Telus AM. Number 27, up one, Voyagers in the TARDIS. That's Sandro's podcast, by the way. 26, up three, the Tonic Toolbox. Sorry. Sonic Toolbox, yes, 25.
I've heard of that one.
Have you? 25, that's really weird when you hear yourself coming back. The Arrow of Time re-entry. Number 24, non-mover for Under the Miniscope. Number 23, up two, Ian Todd's World of Podcasts. Number 22, up five, the Coltham Collective. Number 21, a re-entry for The Oncoming Storm. Number 20, up six, Travelling the Vortex. 19... Re-entry, Drumpkin Trine Trouble. 18. Number 18, a re-entry for Outpost Scaro. Number 17, down to the Casterbarus podcast. Number 16, a re-entry for Bigger on the Inside.
Hey, do you want to hear something?
No,
I don't. As you mentioned, Casterbarus podcast.
Go on then.
When Tom Baker sent me a letter, he actually had a stamp of Casterbarus, so it looked like it came from Casterbarus.
Oh, brilliant.
I thought that was pretty nice.
Number 16 is a re-entry for Bigger on the Inside, whose latest episode is 6 hours long, and I don't know if I'm ever going to have time to listen to it.
Yeah, I saw
that. Seriously?
I saw that, and I immediately deleted it because I cannot devote 6 hours to a podcast.
The only possibility is that they typed in the wrong amount on the time thing when you type in the time for your thing.
I think it's 12 hours long.
Yeah. But I mean, basically what they're doing is they've covered every single episode of the classic series from start to finish. They've just reached Survival. And they wanted to do a recap, basically looking back at the best and worst of the classic series in one episode of their podcast. So I wouldn't be surprised if it reached 4 hours, but I how long that would have taken to edit, if indeed it is 6 hours long.
I'll let you know,
Kirby, as to whether it is indeed 6 hours, because I have downloaded it. It didn't take that long to download, so I'm doubting it is actually that long.
Yeah.
And let me know if it's worth listening to. I normally do listen to that, but I'm not going to take that much time.
I will let you know, but I'm currently listening to their episode about the last two classic stories. Anyway, right, moving on. Number 15, up five, Earth Station 1. Oh, I got a very nice birthday message from. Thank you very much, Earth Station 1. Number 14.
Earth Station 1 or Earth Station Who? They have two podcasts. One is specifically Who, the other is more general.
No, Earth Station 1. Number 14, non-mover for Madman in a Box. Number 13, a re-entry for 2 Minute Time Lord. Number 12, re-entry for Sound quick. On Sight. Number 11, re-entry for Staggering Stories. And into the big top 10. Up one. At number 10, it's Doctor Who. Who's he? Number 9.
I don't know. Who is he?
Yeah.
Well, I have no idea. And nor does Stephen Moffat, apparently. or Dorium. Number 9, down 2 for the Doctor Who Book Club podcast. Anyway, number 8.
Free Are entry we keeping you up?
No, it's the Doctor Who Book Club podcast. No, I'm only joking. Only joking. Number 8, re-entry, the Omega podcast. Number 7, re-entry for Adventures in Time, Space and Music. Yes.
Yay.
Well, no, I'm not going to do an impression of Wendell because my voice is all right at the moment. Number 6, up 3, the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast. Number 5.
Yay! Oh, we've come up indeed, in the world.
Indeed. Up 3. And number 5. Number 5, non-mover for the memory cheats. Number 4, up 2, the impossible
Did
podcast.
Did you get a chance to listen to the memory cheats yet?
No. Number 3, up 1 for the DWO WhoCast. Number 2, re-entry for the Tin Dog podcast. And at number 1, up 1, the Doctor Who podcast.
What was number 4?
The impossible
we're
podcast.
Talking over that.
Okay, yeah, uh-huh. Because we were talking over it, or I was.
No, yeah, you were. That's exactly what. As far as the memory cheats podcast goes, I downloaded Bigger on the Inside, and it's going to take me quite a long time getting through that. I will eventually get round to listening to it, but I've got to try and I must really commit myself to watching the episodes of Doctor Who well in advance of us doing a review of them.
Well, the nice thing about the memory cheats is since they're going similar to Who on Who, since they go back to classic stuff that I haven't seen in ages. They were just their most recent one was on the Power of Kroll, and it made me want to go back and watch that one again.
Well, as you said,
that was he
talking about these episodes.
Was Philip Maddock in that?
I'll shut up, shall I? Yes, he is in it. He is okay. Philip Maddock is in the Power of Kroll. Yes, but as Johnny said, listening to us talking about these two episodes makes him want to go and watch that episode. So hopefully that's going to be the case all round. Really, I'm going to let you carry on chatting for a little while because I've got to put the dog's dinner on. I will be back very shortly.
Yeah, I'm getting pretty peckish.
I'm hungry. What
I haven't
time is
had
it where
breakfast
you are?
Yet.
It's 7:33 in Australia PM.
In the morning.
No, at night.
Okay, yeah, dinner time. Yeah, I'm sitting here. I'm going to have some soup for lunch. Nice.
It's 6:33 here.
In the morning.
I've got my dinner sitting in front of me, but...
I've got breakfast waiting. I'm going to eat breakfast when I get to work.
Oh, Jesus. What time did you have to get up at to do this?
4:30.
Oh, man, that is commitment. Well done.
That's my standard Monday morning routine.
Really? God. Do they still show old Doctor Who in Australia?
They're showing the new series. They haven't shown the old. Yeah, I think they're probably up to the second series by now, I suppose.
Okay. Because a friend of mine, Facebook me a few years ago now saying that they'd started, I think it was,
start from the beginning and go to the end of the old series.
Did they go all the way through to Sylvester McCoy?
I think so. Yeah. Because Reese, who's on the podcast too, most of the time, he was watching it when it did all the old episodes again.
Yeah.
But I remember, I think it was when the 40th anniversary they started again. But the thing that sucks is they don't use the remastered copies. They use the old, old film prints and.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't look as good. But,
especially if you're watching it on like a HD TV or something and you've just got this old stock. Yeah, yeah.
I tell you what, it makes a difference to your enjoyment of things, I reckon.
Yeah, it would do, I think. It's strange because, I mean, I remember when I got the VHS years ago of, what was it? I think it was an Unearthly Child.
This is Toby Haydoke, and you're listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Have you fed your dogs?
They're the dogs are in... Well, no, I haven't fed them yet. I'm just cooking their dinner.
Oh, no. they're spoilt dogs.
Yeah, do you reckon? Cooking their dinner?
Yeah.
Spoilt.
They are.
No, they're not. Right, I just need to close this page down before I start playing something. There we go. Right. sorry, what were we talking about then? I completely lost what the train of the conversation was at that particular
point. Oh, we got on to, I was just saying about the different, in Australia when they show old Doctor Who, it's not the remastered copy, it's not remastered, it's the old film stock.
And,
you know,
oh, I tell you what, when, and the stupid thing is, when they showed, Invasion of the Dinosaurs,
yeah,
because they had only a black and white first episode. Actually, no. Yeah, what was funny is they didn't show the first episode. They just started from episode 2 when they showed it. And I'm watching it and thinking, what the hell's going on here? Because, yeah, you know, they meet up the dinosaur in the Jeep.
Yeah.
I think, why would they... I think there were some problems with, I don't know, they didn't want to show...
Black and white.
Yeah. I mean, they did the same thing when the Daemons was on.
That story just gets straight into it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Hello, Magic. How about, should we look at a bit of news? We'll go back to a bit of gossip in a minute. But in the United States, don't quite know where that is, but somewhere apparently on planet Earth, a Dalek popped up on the roof of MIT's data centre, housing the Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Now try saying that when you haven't got a good pair of teeth in. Or isn't that a song by the Bee Gees? Massachusetts. Yeah. Anyway, the appearance.
Did you see
followed...
the Kenny Everett version of that?
Yes, I did, but not recently. The appearance follows in the footsteps of the TARDIS a couple of years ago. Apparently, it was the TARDIS. There, exactly the same spot.
Do you reckon that's a deleted scene from The Chase?
Yeah, it could be. Chase is one of my favourite stories of all time. I do like that. A lot of people,
really?
Yeah, a lot of people have it. The only thing I found a bit irritating by The Chase was Peter Burvis's sort of South
Clanton,
Alabama accent didn't quite work for me.
Howdy there.
Magic is trying to nuzzle his nose into my crotch, which is very uncomfortable at the moment. Can you stop doing that, please?
You've got magic in your crotch.
Yeah, more or less. in the United Kingdom, Nicholas Briggs, Simon Gurrier, Peter Ang... I'm not saying that. And J.T. Colgan will be lending their authorial time. Can't they just say they'll be writing to Doctor Who creative writing workshops this year's Winchester Festival? And Daleks invaded Yeovil as part of the 10th anniversary celebration of Yeo. They're getting around these Daleks. Yeo Leisure Park.
Yeah.
A Dalek.
Aren't they coming to the Isle of Wight?
No. We have got one somewhere.
Who won.co.uk. I saw it on the video.
Window. Yes, it is.
Oh,
there.
Yeah.
Indeed.
A white
Dalek.
Yeah.
A Dalek had to be manhandled by four people over a roof to get it into a house in Shrewsbury. God, where's the matter with my teeth today? It was bought by a fan, Andrew Morris, from a children's hospice in Barry Island. A group of pupils in Guildford who had entered the Scripps to Screen competitions may not have won the contest, but Stephen Moffat was so impressed by their work that he decided to send them a goodie bag of Doctor Who items.
Guildford, that's where Ford Prefix from.
Really?
Not from Guildford after all.
Yes.
It's a Beetlejuice.
Clothes and personal belongings donated by John Barrowman to the Dogs Trust have raised more than £200. Only £200?
Was he donating his... donating his underwear, was he?
I don't know, but it's only £200. Maybe the dogs haven't got that much money. They can't actually pay. Classic episodes of Cardiff screening. The two recovered episodes of Doctor Who, of Galaxy 4, Airlock, and Underwater Menace Part 2 were shown to an appreciative audience in Cardiff on Wednesday evening. The Lucky Sod. When are we going to see it?
My local library's got an audio recording of the Underwater Menace.
I have an audio recording of them.
Same here.
On my iTunes somewhere.
I've got it on iTunes as well.
I need to get... I checked it out, didn't have time to listen to it, and I need to get it again.
Yeah. Fair enough.
It's good, the Underwater Menace.
It is. It's got a classic performance of
nothing in the world can stop me now.
See, that's one of those weird things, is that you don't expect the library in Nashville, Tennessee to have Doctor Who stuff, but they do have odd things like at that. They've got the Tom Baker reading robot.
Hang on, that's the door. I'll be back.
And we do the library also has a pretty good collection of the new series DVDs.
That was the postman.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
well, what did you get?
No, he came to pick up a couple of parcels that I packed up last week for Magpie, Music Magpie. Loads of CDs, basically. They didn't turn up on the day they said they were going to pick them up on.
Not for the Magpie Electronics.
Magpie Electronics?
No, not them. So we complained, and then they came the next day, and also arranged to pick them up today as well, apparently. So, yeah, he went off with nothing, really.
To answer your question, no, we don't really have... I can get some stuff in some stores, like I got my little... TARDIS keychain in the comic book store, and
yeah.
I read there's a college town a few miles away that a week ago I found some cardboard stand-ups. But it's rare enough that when you find stuff like that, I take pictures of it and post it on Facebook.
Yeah.
Really?
That's a real cheap way of doing it though, isn't it?
And we do have conventions. I'm going to a convention in just about a month.
Okay.
The very first truly full Doctor Who convention in the American South.
Wow.
Is going to be in Huntsville, Alabama, in the middle of June.
Cool.
There is another one, but that's going to be in 2 weeks outside of Atlanta.
Yeah.
That I went to last year, but it's not entirely Doctor Who. It's Doctor Who and Stargate. Yeah, Stargate.
Oh, yeah.
And I've never bothered with Stargate.
No, recently mad on Stargate.
Yeah.
Who are the guests at this? The one next month.
The we don't have any actual stars or anything. We've just got like some fairly old time fans and some science fiction writers and stuff. It's mainly just.
Hey, Kirby, you're a guest.
No, I'm not a guest.
You're representing the Doctor Who 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. Don't be shy about it.
True, but it's just fans gathering together. People who are going to be there are pretty dedicated. There are going to be two Daleks, home-built Daleks, and at least one home-built police box.
Cool, man.
And they put in a lot of effort too, don't they?
They do. And they're very up on the pedantry in regarding the actual accuracy of these TARDISes.
One of the guys who's bringing a Dalek posted final pictures of it last night on Facebook and said, okay, it's ready.
Cool.
Excellent. So that's it for news. There's not really much going on. You hear things about stuff going on behind the scenes, like I've heard that...
Well, you may do.
No, apparently, what's his name, Moffat, has said that the Pond's last episode will be episode 5, so that implies that the Christmas episode is episode 6, obviously.
Well, does it, though? Because, I mean, they could have a companionless episode between, you know...
That's true. Yeah, I didn't think of that possibility. Unless River Song comes back for a couple of episodes, maybe. I think she'll probably be in the Pond's last one. Maybe she stays on for an episode before the Christmas special. Who knows?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a
bad sure
pun.
He does.
Very funny.
They've just finished now, haven't they? They finished recording their episode yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
I haven't seen Karen Gillan tweet anything, but maybe she just got bored of Twitter very quickly.
I think she just, she went, that's us raft now or something like that. But I imagine they probably went off and got hammered, you know.
Probably. Anyway, I'm going to have to draw this to a close because I've got a few jobs I need to do to prevent my equipment from getting damaged when Deb arrives home from work. And that includes not just finishing cooking the dog's dinner, but also stripping the bed and getting it in the washing machine to show that I've actually done something other than podcasting this morning.
Good.
Because she's not in the best of moods at the moment because we have a teenage daughter.
All right, yeah.
But I have to thank you all very much for joining. And you, Johnny, of course.
Thanks for having me.
If you ever want to come back on again, please, you're most welcome.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
And I just got to say, I enjoy your thing with Toby in the Doctor Who magazine. I read
thank
it every issue, so, yeah. So
cool.
Keep up the good work.
I've never actually seen a Doctor Who magazine, so I'm afraid I couldn't say anything Kirby, about it. I'd like to read Kirby. Them.
You can buy them at whowon.co.uk. Yes, that's a whowon.co.uk.
I think I can buy them at Barnes & Noble.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, they probably do. I've seen them in... Well, I was in New York in a Barnes & Noble, and they definitely had it in there.
Ah.
So, there you yeah.
go for it.
But, yeah, what are you doing next week then, Johnny?
Next week... Actually, next week, I'll be travelling... I'm going to Kapow, the comic convention in London.
Excellent.
Yeah, Noel Clark is going, and Tom McRae, and people like that. So,
cool.
Oh, brilliant!
Yeah,
gonna go for that sounds like fun.
Yeah, it'd be good.
Anyway, so thanks very much, Johnny. Thank you, Kirby, and thank you, Robert, for being on the show again this week. And listeners, if you want to send in feedback, please do so. It's 20mb.feedback@gmail.com, and of course, join our Facebook group where we'll find all about various Doctor Who gossip going on that Kirby hears. And
so, yeah, thank you, Kirby.
And that's it. Next week it's episode 114, and we'll be looking at Love and Monsters. And then after that is Fear Her, I'm afraid, but I can't do much about that. Sorry.
Can we skip Fear Her?
I'll have to dig out my notes from last time, so I don't have to watch it.
Kirby, you wanted to skip
the
Idiot's Lantern, didn't you? Unfortunately.
Yeah, but in this case, we actually did hear her a year ago.
Well, just forget we've done it about a year ago, and we'll do it again. Why not? I'll see if I can find my original notes. That'll save me some time.
That's what I was trying to do, yeah.
But we're still going to have to watch it anyway. But anyway, yes, thank you. Of course, with the Olympics coming up, it's more topical now.
Yeah.
True.
I don't think we'll have David Tennant with the torch somehow.
Oh, God. That would be so cool.
There is a picture on my Facebook account of Isabella with the Olympic torch, but it's not lit. Obviously, she's only five. It's a bit dangerous. But if you look out for that. But yes, thanks, everyone. And listeners, see you next week. Bye.
Take it easy.
Bye. Bye.
Is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is the trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.